When I was early in my career, a lot of my obsession was around finding silver bullets, right? As I sort of progressed through my career and matured and met folks who were much more seasoned than I was, I think the pattern recognition there was a lot less of a focus on tactics and more on systems and an operating manual to uncover those tactics.
Nino, thanks so much for being on Go-to-Market Mavericks. I just want to get right into things and start with your experience at Slack.
Oh gosh, how much time do we have? first of all, awesome to be here chatting with you. It's been a while actually since we had a deep dive, so this is great. Okay, so Slack. I always like to start my Slack journey with sort of stating it was a tale of two halves. So the first half was really focused on get as many users as possible. We felt that there were some network effects at play, especially with competition, Microsoft's coming in with Teams. And so that was the first half, is just pure growth at all cost. The second half was really around demand generation. So, building these successful bottoms up motions, building out a sales team, and kind of connecting the tissue between both functions. And so I'll get into the first half and then, mm-hmm. and lead into the second half. So when I got there, I was the first dedicated growth marketer. Marketing team was 20-ish people.
Wow.
I think the company was about 500-600 people, so relatively small marketing team. Before I got there, there was some lightweight experiments with growth marketing, i.e. some dollars spent on Google Ads and Facebook, etc. I think they were spending in the low five figures, maybe somewhere in the 30 to 50K range.
Is that monthly?
Ads. Yeah, monthly. Yeah. And by the time I hit the end of year one, we scaled up to probably over $1 million in that first year. So obviously a lot of lessons work there. One of the questions you asked is what worked. I think the first word that comes to mind is patience. This is back in 2017. VC money was free flowing. There was cash in the bank. So often, competition and otherwise, and just other companies in the space would just throw, pay the Google and Facebook mm-hmm. tax, just spend a ton of money, see the charts go up and to the right, and call it a day. We were very, very intentional on setting clear milestones for scaling, meaning unless we didn't have a really core principle on how investing the dollars either to drive market share or ROI, we wouldn't keep spending. And so what that meant for us was getting really, really good at creating foundations with data. So I spent a lot of time locked in a room with our data science team. I actually just met him for coffee a couple of while back to share war stories. But here's a couple of examples of things that we did. When I first got there, before investing in the channel, we would test the incremental value of every channel we ran and to really get an understanding of what was the impact to the greater business. And so there are tools out there that exist, like House Analytics, and so there are other great ones. Mm-hmm. But we built all of this stuff in-house and really did a good job of doing things that people weren't doing back then. So like geo-testing, mixed market modeling, running ghost ads, those sorts of things. We spent a very painful amount of time feeling very, very confident that the channels we're spending money on, were actually incremental and growing the pie versus just slicing the pie in different slices. So it's a lot of time with that. One of the projects I'm most proud of is building our data infrastructure. So essentially what this means is spending a ton of time figuring out what is our version of Facebook 7 friends in 10 days. And for those that don't know, one of the key insights with the Facebook team was they learned that if you added 7 friends within 10 days of signing up, you're much more likely to be a long-term retained user. And so for Slack, the principal problem we're solving there was, this is kind of crazy when I think about it, the time from first sign up to spending first dollar is in the years, not months.
Oh, wow.
Not even days, right? Which is kind of insane. And so essentially when I first started, we were flying blind, right? We didn't know where to spend our money given the feedback loops were so long and payback periods, et cetera. And so we spent a lot of time, making those initial bets on what channels we think were going to work, knowing that we wouldn't have a simple answer to the ROI question in the short term. But in collecting data, we started building out and doing some pattern recognition and really deep diving on more rigorous analytical analytical work on what is sort of our metric that would be predictive of revenue. And so we locked ourselves in a room and kind of threw everything against the wall. Like, what are the core actions that you could take in the product? You can create channels, you can send messages, you can invite folks, you can implement an integration. We looked at everything and put some real like scientific rigor around what are the actions that are most correlated to a retained user, which most likely be a paying user. And so I think with those two foundations, like predictive metrics and incrementality, we had a lot of confidence in, cool, we can spend X amount more on this channel, we can explore Y channel to really grow the business thoughtfully and essentially not set money on fire.
I was going to ask on the confidence side of things, like how did you get confident? But I think you just answered that question for me. And then the next thing I wanted to follow up is like, okay, you're confident in this, but like what channels were it, what was it that you were able to like scale? Because like 10X is more than 10X if it's going from five digits to millions in the month. So like how did you like... Sounds like you had confidence, but like what channels did you actually invest in and how did you scale?
Yeah. So, Google search is always going to be a core part of any growth marketing channel and performance marketing function. We had some secret weapons in there. I'll give you a good example, actually. We worked with this company called BuySell Ads. They owned a ton of inventory across very specific verticals, mainly the ones we most lean on were design and engineering. And that really came from like very simple data feedbacks of we saw what types of folks were signing up, what were they using it for, what kind of channels were they creating. We saw a very obvious pattern between developers and designers. It was just very clear in the data that that's what was happening. And so with some reasonable confidence, say, hey, what are different channels out there that really focus on high quality content against these cohorts? And we found this company called BuySell Ads that owned a ton of inventory costs, sites like Stack Overflow, et cetera.
Dribbble, I think, was one. Yeah. I remember them in the day.
Yeah. And so so that was one of our secret weapons. Once we sort of figured out, where audience was, how we measure success, we just found those niche channels that really worked for us and leaned into them. The other part of the equation that I didn't mention, which is probably a really critical part of it too, was attribution. So everybody's favorite word in growth. We essentially built our own in-house model that was what I like to always call, kind of cheekily, an agreed upon lie. Like, we know that there's no such thing as a perfect attribution model, right? You can't get into the head of somebody. Maybe that'll be possible with Neuralink and AI in the future, but there's too many variables. And so we essentially created a set of rules that tried to value the impact of an impression versus a click, gave it some relative weight, and kind of just see what would happen when we put some dollars with that model in mind. And so, yeah, with that combination of making those early bets on what we thought which channels would work, collecting data, figuring out our audience, where they're hanging out, and having some sort of attribution on top of that, that was basically those three core elements that allowed us to scale pretty significantly. So again, this isn't rocket science. This is just really being intentional and patient and having some sort of rigor, knowing that it's not going to be perfect, but gave us some directional framework to scale. So yeah, that's probably how
Were you pretty ruthless of, this channel is bringing in this these many signups at this cost, like, and if it's below or above this line, then like let's scale the heck out of it, or like let's cut it? Is that kind of how it went? Or
100%. And what I think about immediately is working with some of our partners who back in the glory days, they would treat us pretty well for spending some dollars with them, right? Think Warrior playoff tickets, fancy dinners, those sorts of things. And it's quite painful to tell those guys, like, hey, the data's telling us that we can't keep taking these fancy dinners with y'all. Deeply apologize, but yeah, we were pretty ruthless despite the negative consequences in our social life. But we were pretty ruthless.
Okay, well, I mean, we could probably talk about Slack the whole time. I know we have a short timeline here, but so I want to go on to your time at Netlify. And especially like around the topic of selling to developers, I feel like, there's a lot of people who listen to this and tune in for, they're an open source company, they're a dev tooling company. Like, how do we, this is a notoriously challenging market and audience to win affinity across. And like, How do you do that and do that in the same kind of way you did at Slack? So I wonder if you could take us through some of your time there.
Sure, sure. Interestingly, there were some crossover there. I mean, the initial sort of growth was driven by the developer community at Slack, as the founders telling their friends, and that really was founded on the developer community. So it took sort of a lot of those learnings and moved them over to Netlify. And I was thinking a little bit about this when doing some prep for this. I think there are a couple of core principles that are probably obvious, but worth kind of covering and then getting into some tactical bits on how to actually execute on those principles. The first one is authenticity. So one of the first times I really worked directly with the developer relations team was at Slack, even more so at Netlify. The developer relations was absolutely critical in driving that authenticity. So you'll see it in the content we're creating, in our blog posts, folks who are interacting on social media and communities. They're all folks who are building in public and actual developers with their own communities and their own audiences. And I think a lot of our go-to-market was driven by putting our developers front and center. And that really shone through in our technical talks and all of the things that I just mentioned in terms of how we went to market. Very much driven by community. I think another core principle is be useful, not promotional. So it's very easy to speak marketing speak and really in an Apple-esque way, really refine the copy to tell a story. I mean, really what it comes down to is just being useful. So really what that means is technical content has to be in place. If you are launching a feature, folks are going to be looking for YouTube videos, your documentation. You want very specific and practical, assets, documents, videos, etc., to help them actually implement the thing. And it has to be technically accurate, actually work. So that's super, super critical. I think I touched on community a little bit. Absolutely critical. So again, mentioning X, Twitter, really engaging with folks there, building communities on Discord, Slack. The community are your champions, right? Those are the guys that are going to be your NPS 10 flags. Do you even use NPS? I have no idea. but community is where you build that audience, right? So some of the tactical executions of this, and I'm sure folks are doing this, but help folks throw pizza parties and give them a budget just to hang out with their local communities, right? And talk about your products and show up and do the demos and really enable those champions to build their sub communities within your sort of greater community strategy. So I think those are the things that aren't going to change. It's really about the people. It's about the developers speaking their language, mm-hmm. and having folks that can walk the walk and talk the talk.
I feel like
that's not going to change.
Yeah, I feel like one challenge on the go to market side of things, if you're a salesperson, if you're a marketing person,
yeah.
or if you're like a growth person in your shoes, is like, what do you actually say to developers? Because like, you don't have that subject matter expertise. And so I'm wondering if that was a separate team, or like how you were able to like ensure that like that your message was actually authentic and actually helpful, if you're not necessarily like in the shoes, or you don't have like the full empathy of being in seat like that your right. audience does. Is that how did you navigate that?
Yeah. So I'm thinking specifically about Netlify. I mean, one of our core use cases was build your marketing site with higher velocity and scale. And when I think about the buying committee, right? Let's kind of get to brass tacks on how people actually purchase a Netlify, like an enterprise plan. You have to consider the decision maker, which oftentimes that'll come from a CMO, somebody who needs to build a ton of marketing sites to support campaigns, product launches, etc. And so you obviously grok a different message for those folks, right? It'll be around productivity, about speed, about building personalized sites for your demand gen team so they can build effective ABM campaigns. So it's all about personalization, speed, execution, that sort of thing. Now, in that process, at some point they'll bring in a developer partner, whether it's a CTO or an individual contributor, that'll give it a shot. And they'll ask for their opinion, right? How do you think about this? One of the things that worked really effectively in Netlify were developers were using Netlify to build their project sites. There's a free tier. You can build your portfolio sites at essentially no charge. And so you can call that a brand strategy, strategy, right? They're sort of familiar with the brand, given that we gave them this utility to build something of value to them at low cost. And so there's some familiarity there. For the ones that didn't have that familiarity, you got to hit them with the technical content, right? If they're getting this RFP coming from tops down to experiment with this platform, how do we make it as clear as possible for them? So that'll involve not only the technical documentation, which I mentioned, but like the classic bread and butter stuff, case studies. Companies like X are doing this to build their process. Again, it's all the marketing 101 stuff, right? Like making sure you have the right message for the right person at the right time in that buying cycle. No rocket science other than just doing it really effectively.
And the team building that, was it like a DevRel team? Was it product marketing, all the above kind of thing?
All of the above. Certainly DevRel was a huge part of like speaking to that developer audience, where product marketing and somebody like me on the growth and demand gen side was, what are the right cohorts to focus on? What are the right messages we have on the website? And my role is, how do we find those people and do this at scale? So certainly a team effort. That's where, where it all comes together.
All right. So I know we're moving quickly here, but moving on, I know, I don't know if you coined this, but I was doing my own research and saw you have a philosophy around a growth operating system. So let's just talk through this. What is it? Tell us about your methodology here.
Yeah. Okay. Let me give you some background on why I wrote this thing. I think when I was early in my career, a lot of my obsession was around finding silver bullets, right? You hear these stories about, a growth marketer throughout X creative and at 10X revenue. So I was just completely obsessed with trying to find the silver bullets. As I sort of progressed through my career and matured and met folks who are much more seasoned than I was, I think the pattern recognition there was a lot less of a focus on tactics and more on systems and an operating manual to uncover those tactics. Elena Verna, famous in sort of the growth world, once told me to emphasize learnings rather than focusing too much on outcomes and individual tactics. And I really took that lesson to heart. And so with that in mind, I started thinking through what is the right sort of environment framework, if you will, you want to create to uncover these sort of insights and tactics. And that's really where the concept of a growth operating system came from, which is really just a set of best practices, rituals, and really in simplified language, just what are the kinds of meetings and groups of people you need to have and communication you need to have to uncover those things. So these are things like, what is the right cadence of doing quarterly planning, brainstorms, how often should you meet with your finance and engineering and sales counterparts to give a feedback loop on what you're seeing in market. Things like demo days. This is something that I learned from my time at Linktree from Jay-Z, who's the CPO there. What is an effective way to show off the work that your team is doing to get some excitement, to get some buy-in on some of the bets that you want to make? How do you solicit ideas from other teams? So it's really around what are the best practices, rituals, meetings that uncover these insights and ultimately will lead to sort of the outcomes that you want and from a quantitative sense.
I feel like a lot of it goes missed, where it's like you need to showcase your work to other stakeholders across functional teams. You need to have this cadence of how to review experiments and stuff like that. And I feel like a lot of times, I don't know if this is the case for you, but growth teams are kind of in this silo and we're just doing this thing and executing, and we don't actually take a step back, reflect, review things to learn. So is that kind of the
gist of it? Yeah, no, totally. And I think for me personally, maybe one of my weaknesses, even to this day, is just cross-functional communication. I'm sort of heads down, and I love getting my hands dirty and doing the work. And oftentimes I forget how critical it is to communicate. And so a growth operating system, one of its functions is essentially to force the team to do that. And you'll be surprised at how effective it is, just in terms of, again, getting buy-in to secure budget, resources, et cetera, but just to get people excited on seeing progress at the work and helping culturally or driving motivation. Like, hey, product marketer, you suggested this bit of copy on a website. We made that change and we improved our conversion rate by 5%. Like, those feedback loops are really important to keep people excited and motivated and want to work with you and get to those insights, like I mentioned. And so, yeah, that's really what it's all about, is what are the things you need to do to get to those insights and ultimately drive results?
Yeah, definitely guilty of of that myself.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but I definitely consider myself a natural introvert. And so I certainly have challenges there. And so this is my way of reverse engineering how to force myself to communicate more effectively. So nice. Yeah, it's been super helpful.
Love it. Okay. And so moving along quickly here, I know you were doing some advisory work. You're now helping out Anthropic with things. Like, what are you doing now? What are you excited about? Like, what does the future of go-to-market look like? Like, give us the latest and greatest in your mind.
The latest and greatest. Wow. I'm not sure about greatest, but I'll give you the latest. So working with the Anthropic team at the moment, essentially what I was brought into was build out their ABM/demand gen function. I'm one of like two folks on the marketing team, very similar to Slack, where we have one of us focus on sort of that self-serve motion, cloud.ai sign up. I focus on sort of the API business, so lead generation for sales to build with directly with the Anthropic API. So it's been super awesome. The pace is nothing like I've ever seen before, so that's been really fun, just in terms of how quickly the industry changes. One of the more exciting things there is, again, being able to build this from zero to one and hopefully mostly avoiding a lot of the mistakes in the past. We can do a 3-hour talk on everything I've done wrong, which maybe we should at some point. So it's been awesome to integrate some of those learnings and helping build this function on the ground up. What's working? So this might be obvious to some, but there's obviously a lot of organic interest and excitement in the space. We put something out in market, people will talk about it. And so in a sense, there is some level of predictability and, okay, when we release a new model or release a new feature, we know that there'll be some kind of reaction in the market. We just need to make sure that we're, at the right place, at the right time, and the right channel with sort of these messages, all the one-on-one stuff. Essentially what I'm saying is we're not looking under the covers for volume, which kind of leads me to one of the principal challenges is, it's kind of discerning like who are the window shoppers versus who are the buyers. A ton of folks want to have a conversation with companies like Anthropic, OpenAI, I'm sure, to shape their point of view on their AI strategy, right? And so there are a lot of conversations. Folks ingest our content. Folks want to talk to us. How do we figure out what are the right signals that really indicate somebody who's ready to deploy versus someone who's just there for the conversation? So that's been really the core challenge is, how do we think about potentially using tools like yours at Common Room, et cetera, to sort out, how do we really model that in a way where we feel a high level of confidence, predictability in terms of generating pipeline, et cetera. That's been really fun trying to sort that out. So what's exciting for me. Obviously AI. I just talked about it for the last couple of minutes, but really, what does that mean? And so when I think about sort of the core principles and brass tacks of all of this marketing and growth stuff that I've been involved in the last however many years, it's really about, I mentioned earlier, how do we distribute the right message at the right time for folks, right? I remember back in the days at Google, I was part of the team that was essentially the internal agency for running Google Ads for Google Ads. So I spent a lot of time, hyper-optimizing Google AdWords campaigns to drive more Google advertisers. It's very meta. but I think my hypothesis on why, and I think it's fairly obvious, why Google AdWords is probably the most successful marketing channel of all time is it was the platform that allowed you to create a framework for delivering that message at the right time in the most granular way possible, at least compared to most other platforms, right? Versus spray and pay, commercial TV and like stuff like that. And so when I think about AI and its application to that, there is probably some in the long tail, the ability to hyper-personalize to every individual user that comes to your website with the right message at the right time. What is that actually going to look like and how realistic that is? I think we're pretty early innings on this, but theoretically that will be possible at some point. And so that's super exciting to think about how to, crawl, walk, run into that. I think the other big thing, and maybe this is just coming off the election cycle, is just observing and kind of developing my own point of view on consumer consumption habits. This is probably the first political election where there's a pretty tangible tectonic shift between mainstream media to, you know, citizen journalism, podcasts, primary source media, that sort of thing. Even I think about, like, very meta, us having this conversation versus, you know, folks reading some article on some, I don't know, demand generation website. I'm just looking that up. But, you know, we're having an authentic conversation, right, about the things that have worked for us, what haven't worked for us. There's a very obvious shift there. And the questions I'm asking myself is, what does that mean for, you know, the companies that I help drive growth for? Where do we lean in? Is it a podcast? Do we create our own sort of media channels to do this? It's super exciting to kind of see the shift away from the, you know, paying the Google and Facebook tax, which is always going to be there to some extent, but really understanding how to experiment to these channels. I'll leave with this. I met one of the core principal product managers for Google AdWords back in the day, and this brilliant guy with an engineering background, and I talked to him. I thought I was going to get something that was very technical, but he said to me that was very simple that I still remember to this day. He said, "Hey, Nino, you know, if you want to catch fish, you just need to fish where the fish are fishing." It's really as simple as that. He obviously built some very sophisticated technical infrastructure to sort that out. But that's what I think about when I think about these modern consumption habits. Like, how do I cast my line into those fish ponds and drive growth for these teams? So yeah, that's clearly changing, and it's super exciting to see where it's going to go.
Yeah. Well, I feel like we could go on for hours and hours, but yeah. We have a short amount of time. So Nino, I want to thank you so much for the time, and really appreciate it. And we'll any last plugs for yourself or anything like that before we sign off here?
Oh gosh, I am a terrible self-promoter. Follow me on LinkedIn. I don't even know what my LinkedIn handle is.
We'll link it in the show notes.
we'll figure it out. But it was awesome talking to you. And I would love to do it again.
Awesome. Thanks, Nino.
All right, thanks so much. Bye.